This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
I want to take just a moment to tell you about Renters Warehouse, an award-winning property management company that services over 13,000 investors with over 18,000 properties nationwide. They are the only residential property manager rated by Morningstar. Their centralized model with local staff provide trustworthy support across multiple markets. These experts track all aspects of your property and never try to profit from maintenance repairs. Plus, you'll enjoy flat rate pricing and warranted tenants up to 18 months. Check this out. For a free 3-month property management trial exclusive to Jason Hartman listeners, visit renterswarehouse.com/Jason. Again, that's renterswarehouse.com/Jason. Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, episode number 827, 827. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and I've got a returning guest with me today, and that is our client and Venture Alliance member, Elizabeth. And maybe we'll talk about a little client case study with her again. We did one on that before, but really we want to talk about some other things as well as the new podcast that Elizabeth is co-hosting with me. Elizabeth, welcome back. How are you?
I'm terrific, Jason. Thank you.
Good, good. It's good to have you. So since I mentioned the new podcast, why don't we just get that out of the way, mention it now. And it's all about the WIN, right? W-I-N. What does that stand for?
It's the Women Investing Network, and I couldn't be more excited. We're helping women win in investing and in life. The types of guests that we have are focus on strengths and strategies around career, corporate, entrepreneur, business, family, communication, health, wellness, longevity. There's a wide variety of things, but also there's the element of real estate investing that is the cornerstone of the show. And it's turning out really well. I'm super excited about it.
Good stuff. Good to hear. And by the way, I didn't mention you are coming to us today from beautiful Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. So I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew that.
You say beautiful, but we're vacillating between downpours and sunny skies. So.
Oh, well, when it's sunny, Seattle's beautiful. Of course, you and your husband, Neil, were kind enough to co-host us when we brought the Venture Alliance Mastermind to Seattle. That was, three trips ago?
Yeah.
They're all running together now. We've done so many trips together. It's so much fun.
And there was so much fun. But, you know, that trip was great because we really lucked out with kind of perfect skies in later September, or early
we
September,
did.
Rather.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really nice. Good stuff. Well, good stuff. Well, hey, Elizabeth, we want to dive into a few topics today. You know that last week I discussed crap rate on the show, and it's not really that bad. I just kind of thought of that off the top of my head there. And what I meant by that is not crap rate, but cap rate, okay? And how cap rate is not a very good metric. Again, it's used a lot in commercial real estate, but it really shouldn't be used in residential that much, because it doesn't tell the whole story. And we want to know more. We want to tell a more complete story when we talk about real estate investing. And today, why don't we talk a little bit about a better metric than crap rate or cap rate, and that is cash on cash return. Although that doesn't really tell the full story either, but I think it's a little better than cap rate. But, you know, talk to us about that, if you would, because you discussed this on the Win Show, and so that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because every time I interact with a different provider, a different, you know, real estate group, a different finance group, they always calculate everything differently. And so one of the things that I really like is in your property tracker tool, you've got in the pro forma, you've got a very consistent way of showing the cash on cash return. And so for me, cash on cash return is a great way of at a glance determining if this is the good next potential investment for you. So it's the cash on cash return is a calculation of all of your expenses and that generate the actual cash flow that you're going to get, and divide that by the initial year's all in monies. And so that includes not only the amount of money that you're putting down, but the money that you're using as your closing to get the total number. The numerator or the denominator, the number that you're dividing. And then the cash flow that you're getting, you need to be thinking about not only the rent that you're going to be getting, but you need to be thinking about your vacancy rate. You also need to be thinking about your expenses, such as your property management expenses and your maintenance fees and your insurance and your taxes. And that generates your all-in operating net profit.
Okay, so here's the thing about cash on cash return. If the property goes down in value, which I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, given the market conditions, they're just nuts. But, you know, hey, there are cycles, right? But again, we're into the linear markets where you don't have those big swings, but you do have a little minor swings, not versus the cyclical markets where they really do swing and it can get really ugly. So if the value of the property goes down, but you as the investor are able to maintain the same income and expense ratio, then your cash on cash return will be consistent. Okay. Sometimes in a down market, the value can actually decline. But as I talk about in the three dimensions of real estate concept, which we've done on many other shows, the rents will actually increase because the people are not going, you know, motivated, the renters are not motivated to jump into the housing market when prices are going down, which actually, they ought to be contrarians, and that's exactly what they probably should do at that time, right? But they don't. So you can actually see the rental market strengthen as you see prices drop. So your cash on cash return could get better in a down market, and so could your cap rate, basically, too. And that's the interesting thing. It doesn't include appreciation, okay? And but it does include leverage. Cap rate doesn't include leverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So what metric do you like to go by and why?
Well, for me, I like to look at, because I'm lucky enough, I guess, that I no longer can get Fannie Mae loans. And so I'm having to do commercial lending. And so I'm just looking for what the actual percentage of cash flow that I'm going to be getting over my mortgage. And so I don't know what you would call that. But basically, what's my net cash flow compared to the total price. And so I don't know if that's a specific calculation, but I have literally a 46 column spreadsheet that I do to track, to not only look at opportunities, but track how my properties are flowing. And so really I'm looking for cash flow over total money outlaid, but not in year one. I'm looking at the actuals that I'm getting after there's a true pattern established. And so for me, that first year, it's anybody's guess. It's after I really seeing how the true track rate, if you will, of the properties are performing over years. And what I'm really surprised with is, even though I'm buying in linear markets, Jason, you know, the appreciation
in linear markets, you said.
Yeah, yeah. In linear markets, okay. There's a good deal of appreciation that I've been able to realize over the last, you know, since 2012 is really when I started investing, I think. And the amount of appreciation that I've been able to see the true ROI is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Well, welcome to the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. That's income property, right? By the way, how many properties do you have now, Elizabeth?
So we have 50. We've got another 3 coming online soon.
So you'll be up to 53, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And actually, we should say, in the interest of full disclosure, we are on the verge of making you and a couple of other key people that some of our listeners know when they've heard on the show before, shareholders in the company, minority shareholders. So I know you're liquidating a couple of properties to do that deal, right?
That's correct. And that's what's really cool about this portfolio. It's even though I've only had it for a short period of time, and this is why I'm so intimately familiar with the amount of appreciation that's occurred. Heard, I can actually liquidate. And even though, you know, normally when you sell a property, you go, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to have to pay closing costs. I'm having to pay, you know, back the tax, some of the tax depreciation that I was able to write off before. I'm having to, you know, pay fees to fix it up. But even so, the portfolio has performed well enough that for the properties that I'm selling, you know, I'm able to retain just a chunk of money beyond my initial investment. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm excited about the opportunity of, you know, becoming a shareholder in this company, because it's, you know, it's obviously a great company. I think quite highly of it. And it's done well by me, for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, we appreciate your business and appreciate you being a client and appreciate you being a Venture Alliance member and a guest on the show today as well. So that was interesting about the cash on cash return. Folks, I think that is a better metric than cap rate. But again, the metric I favor is just the overall return on investment. So I like looking at the rent to value ratio. That's my quick rule of thumb as I go in. You know, am I getting that 1% rent to value ratio? Boom. Did I get it? Okay. Or somewhere in that neighborhood. That's the first cut. And then just looking, as you look at jasonhartman.com and you click on the properties section, you can see those performas and the overall return on investment. The projected overall return on investment is in bold, because I think that is the most accurate thing. And as I mentioned on last week's show, when I went off on my rant about crap rate, you know, I talked about how even that overall return on investment does not include some very significant benefits. So it's really potentially much higher than that. And what I said back then, just to refresh your memories, because it's been a week, is I said that it doesn't include the advantage of owning and rebalancing that portfolio over the course of your life, so that you can do a 1031 tax deferred exchange and reinvest all of those dollars, not the post-tax dollars, not paying Uncle Sam, not paying the government first, you get to reinvest it all. You don't get to do that with stocks, with businesses, with bonds, with anything else. It's special in real estate or income property. Now, actually, I shouldn't say you don't get to do it with anything else. That's actually not true. There are some 1031 exchange opportunities with things like airplanes, but the problem is those actually really do depreciate. Your real estate hopefully appreciates. So, you know, you have depreciation there and it's real in the real estate. You know, it's hopefully not real. And then also, I think you can do it with cattle and stuff like that, but I don't own any cattle. So, you know, I don't know about cows and stuff like that. So,
that's funny.
Yeah. But anyway, that's that. Okay. So let's talk about a couple of other things. First of all, I wanted to ask you, Elizabeth, about just kind of generally, you know, and I got to say this, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. When Trump won, you were bummed out. I mean, you were bummed. Elizabeth is like one of my liberal friends. Okay. And she has said she's given it up and now she's a libertarian. So welcome to the Libertarian Party, Elizabeth.
thank you, Jason. And thank you for putting me on the spot for it.
Yes, I am. You didn't know I was going to bring this up, did you? Okay, but I wanted to ask you, because, you know, you were just like devastated when Trump won. I know you're not a fan, and the jury's out for me, honestly. I know people probably think I'm a Trump fan, but that guy worries me. He's reckless, okay?
And, yeah.
You know, he could start World War III on his freaking Twitter account, okay? I don't know about him.
Literally.
Yeah, the jury is out on Trump, if you ask me, you know, whatever.
Although I'm slightly encouraged by the tax. Now, I haven't haven't seen any details yet, but you know, the conversations around the tax, the new tax laws that he's talking about, they potentially could be really beneficial for.
It'll be phenomenal. If the tax rate for small companies goes from 39% to 15%, oh my God, do you know what's going to happen? It's going to be insane. We're all going to live in utopia.
Well, I don't know about utopia.
Welcome to Eden.
But certainly companies can put more money into R&D. They can afford to hire more people and take bigger risks. And I think that that's the bigger risks in the R&D parts, I think, are the most exciting for me, because that's when we're going to get true innovation starting to occur. Right now, people are having to, you know, because they're giving away 35-40% of their money to, you know, to taxes, right? So they have to be really conservative about the decisions that they're making, even for large corporations. But, you know, you get 20% back, and all of a sudden, now you have the money to really start expanding. People, you know, on the more liberal side of things might be going, oh, they're just going to, you know, stockpile all their profits. Companies don't actually work on just stockpiling profits, although Apple might be the exception to that, right? They're sitting in a lot of cash. But most companies actually need to spend a large portion of their monies in R&D so that they can determine what is going to be the next product that's going to just really hit.
The next big thing that might change the world, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and there's no question that, look, you know, it's always a decision of you give it to the entrepreneurs, the citizens, the people, or you give it to the government. And who do you think is going to manage that money better? Well, I think we all know, regardless of what side of the political aisle we're on, you know, that individual people and individual businesses are probably going to manage it better. Not always, but, you know, it's, I just don't think, you know, sending that money to Washington, D.C. is a very good way to go. And, you know, people are saying, well, with the Trump tax proposal, you know, it's going to increase the deficit. Now, maybe it will, maybe it won't, maybe it will for a time, and then it'll change. And of course, this is the old Laffer curve, supply side economics, trickle down economics, Reaganomics type discussion, right? Of, you know, increasing economic activity by lowering tax rates. And look at, even if it doesn't, I mean, this may sound really irresponsible and kind of against my anti-Keynesian philosophy. But you know what? Even if we just run more deficits, it's like we are so beyond the beyond already with deficits and debt in this country. As long as we can keep the biggest military in the world, the biggest brand, you know, and all the other advantages we have in the U.S., I think we're going to be fine. I mean, you know, it's like the question you always got to ask yourself is compared to what? I mean, America, yeah, it's all messed up and we're running it into the ground, but compared to what? It's all just a game of relativity. There's no absolute in this. There's only a comparison of here's the U.S. versus country A, B, C, D. And I think, you know, the U.S. is going to keep its reserve currency status for a long, long time and probably prosper for a long, long time. So I'm not that overly concerned about deficits. And I normally wouldn't say that, but it's only because we're so beyond ridiculous already that there's no way we can pay it back. We're just going to have to inflate our way out of it. You know, it's the way it's going to be.
Well, and I think the point that you're bringing up is you've got to work within the process in order to change the process and in order for you to realize traction, if you will. And so taking advantage of real estate tax opportunities makes real estate the right income that drives the action for people to invest more in real estate, which then provides housing for, you know, for a very large population, right?
And that is why it is the sacred cow of the tax code. People are worried that, you know, under every new administration, right? You know, well, what if they take this benefit away or that benefit away? I guarantee you, well, I can't guarantee you this, but I bet you, I won't guarantee you, but I will bet you that even if they take one perk away in real estate tax code, they will add another. And, you know, say, for example, 1031 exchange goes away. Okay, well, there will be an adjustment in the market for that, right? Everything equalizes It does take a few years for it to happen, though. That's the part that kills people. But I bet they'll give us something else. I mean, look, if they took the 1031 tax deferred exchange away and lowered the mortgage interest deduction for homeowners, hey, I would love it, Elizabeth, if they would take away the mortgage deduction for homeowners, because that would make them all much more likely to rent. And guess what? I'm a landlord, so that's fine with me. You see, things always equalize, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, but what is the thing I was bugging you about, like being bummed out about the Trump win. But what is your sentiment now, if I can ask you, because, you know, you were pretty gloomy there for a couple of months, I'd say.
Yeah, I would actually say I was going through a true depression, much like much of the country, and not necessarily like many of your closest friends. Right. I realize you have a lot of friends on both sides of the aisle, so that's not necessarily a fair statement. But, you know, there was the fear of the unknown, right? There was a lot of the fear of the unknown. And quite frankly, the rhetoric that Trump, and to a lesser degree, Pence, you know, communicated during the campaign.
Spewed is okay.
You know, honestly, it was really scary. And yeah. I think that as Trump, I don't know what the quote was the other day. It was something like, I didn't realize it was going to be this hard.
Right. He's getting, you know, what's
he's
interesting about Trump is
right?
here you've got the guy with possibly the biggest ego on the planet, right?
Yeah.
Donald Trump. And, you know, he's kind of getting a little humble.
Yes.
I think this is good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, honestly, with Kellyanne Conway and what's the Nazi guy? O'Bannon.
Nazi guy.
He's stepping away a little bit.
Oh my God, people, you heard that, right?
O'Bannon
Nazi guy, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But you know, what I believe is Trump is realizing that the job is a lot harder than he thought, even if with the whole, you know, House and Senate on his side in theory, you know, he's realizing that politics are a little more challenging than he'd expected them to be. I think that he's still trying to drive forward his promises. And for me, I'm not seeing a whole lot of traction on the good ones or the bad ones. I'm honestly hopeful about the tax promise, but the rest of them about, you know, put up a wall immediately. There's these lawsuits that are getting thrown up, and I find it fascinating.
This is the thing, folks. Isn't it great? I mean, you know, a couple great things about it. And Elizabeth, this is a bit of a tangent, so please hold your thought there. Remember what you were going to say. But, you know, the first thing, and I said this at the Meet the Masters event, and of course you were there, that was what I started with, is it is so inspiring, really, to see, regardless of your political spectrum and your beliefs, to see Trump and Obama walking together, you know, during the inauguration, and, you know, Trump waving Obama off in the helicopter and so forth. I mean, the orderly transfer of power, we should all be so grateful that we, you know, if we live in a Western country, right, where you have that, you should all be so grateful that there's no military coup, there's no bloodshed, you know, it's all just, that's just so impressive. And then the other part of it is that, you know, even with Trump's rhetoric and all the stuff that you didn't like, okay, and many people didn't like, about half the country hated him, half the country loved him, or at least liked him enough to vote for him. You know, he can't get it. He's not a dictator. Okay. You know, we've got three branches of government. We've got all kinds of people who have to be accountable to. He can't just do what he wants, which is good. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was surprised at how quickly they pulled out the VP, breaking the ties, and, you know, the nuclear option when it came to the Supreme Court. But even so, things are moving a lot slower than he'd expected, which gives me hope. And the reason why it gives me hope is it's giving him time to reflect and really understand. So, yes, people wanted to vote an outsider in. They wanted to change the system. But, you have to understand the system enough in order to change it. And so now he's getting some, you know, some learnings, you know, some opportunity to figure it out. Hopefully he'll be, you know, smarter, wiser through the end. Like, let's face it, the guy's a great business person. Like, no matter how much support, how many people have really authored, you know, or been the ghostwriter for, you know, his books or what have you, he's been smart enough to get this far in business at this point. And so I'm sure he's going to have to, he realizes he's got to adjust, change, that political leaders are different than business leaders. And so I'm encouraged. And like you said, the system is there to, honestly, the system,
to keep him in check. He can't just do what he wants.
And honestly, right. To keep status quo too, right? Yeah. So the rule of eminent domain, you know, where people want to bust up the land between Mexico and Texas or Mexico and California, what have you, you know, all those landowners are immediately throwing up red flags and saying, absolutely not, right? And so it's that very long legal process, that's, you know, that we're going to be speaking about 25 years from now before that wall gets built.
Possibly. Yeah. Interesting stuff. Okay. So that's just an interesting whole thing about the Trump perspective. But are you optimistic now? I mean, do you see that, like, the real estate market, the economy, they're just booming? I mean, it's insane what's going on. Like, I'm just super optimistic about the Trump economy.
Counterpoint. I'm very optimistic that the positive direction that Obama put.
You're giving Obama all the credit. Oh my God.
We're continuing. But I mean, let's face it. Seattle has been on a massive upswing, even in 2008, where we had a sharp decline from a housing market, right? It's started to push again through the roof, and it's gone well past its 2008 norms in the housing markets. I think that there's, the last report I saw, there were 60 major cranes, you know, like large scale development cranes, employed in the U.S. right now. 32 of them are in the Seattle area.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
So, whenever you go to a place where the national bird is a crane, okay, that is the sign that a bubble is coming. I don't know exactly when it'll be there, but, you know, it's just, there's like too much development, right? There's just this overbuilding, and you just know it always goes in that cycle. So you are probably selling your personal residence at the right time in Seattle, or I don't know, maybe you'll be a year too early, but at some level, you know that bubble is there, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, I'm fiscally conservative, and now's the right time. I've seen the 10-year cycles, you know, time and time again, having worked in in banking at Washington Mutual before the spike and the boom and the bust, and you know, having been in the Seattle area since the late 80s, and you know, it's coming now. How is that going to play out with the rest of the nation? I don't know. Something interesting. Part of the reason why the Seattle market is so pushed up is because the Chinese investor is getting pushed out of Canada. They're getting an increased tax of 15%. Yeah,
Vancouver was a big Chinese market. But what's going on with the increased tax? What were you going to say there?
Oh yeah. So in Canada, they've agreed to implement, or they're talking about implementing, an additional 15% tax for out of country investors in like Vancouver and Victoria, which means that Chinese investor will really shift even more so from that expensive market where they're taking massive hits from their profit and deploying that more into the U.S.
Yeah, that's going to cause a money flight out of Canada. No question about that.
Well, and this is why people ask me, well, why don't I invest locally? Why am I not a local landlord? And the reality is, my cash flow is so much higher. My exposure is so much lower.
Oh, yeah.
When I invest in these linear markets, you know, through companies like you, right, where I'm getting a great portfolio of opportunities at a great price, again using the 1% rent to value, looking at the cash on cash, but really calculating the overarching ROI, and for me also looking at the cash flow after all expenses to make sure that I can make a living and I am. So it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I talk about the risk evaluator model, which, by the way, you know, that's always something good to review. Go to jasonhartman.com and type in Hartman risk evaluator and listen to some of the podcasts I've done on that topic. But it's just amazing how much lower the risk is when you buy in these linear markets that are the, you know, the cash flow oriented, low land value. You know, in other words, they have good LTI or land to improvement ratios. Again, when you buy a property, two major components. One is the land, the other is the improvement or the house or the apartment building sitting on the land, right? So LTI, meaning land to improvement ratio. I coined that term, kind of dovetailing on the concept of LTV, loan to value ratio, that most people have heard of. And it's amazing. If you look at like your place in Seattle, your personal residence, by the way, do you know offhand, or can you just calculate it real quickly while I'm yapping, what the cost per square foot is at your list price, Elizabeth?
Sure. I'll calculate it because I don't know. I mean, we're not, it's not on the market yet, so it's not set. But I can go.
I know, but just at the price you're going to list it at. And so you really see that your risk is so much lower investing in these good, solid, linear markets we recommend. And you can see all those markets at jasonhartman.com. Click on properties. And you'll see the eight or so markets that we're mostly active in. We do have some other markets we do a little bit of business in, but those, I think, eight or nine that you see there are the most active right now. And it's really hard to lose your shirt in those markets if the trend reverses and things go the other way, for two reasons. You know, this is all about sustainable investing, not just one reason, but two reasons. The first one being the LTI ratio being very favorable, land to improvement ratio. When that construction cost is high as a ratio to the land value, that puts a floor on any potential losses. It's like a stop loss, if you will, right? In the stock market, a stop loss. And then the other part of it is that the cash flow is so good that, you know, even if the property goes down in value, you know, you can just maintain it. You're never in a position, hopefully, where you're ever forced to sell a property at the wrong time. That's what sustainable investing is all about. My philosophy of sustainable investing. Never be forced to sell a property at an inopportune time. Did you have that square footage price?
Yeah, it's depending on how we price it, between probably like 265 to 300.
Yeah, per square foot. Okay, so your house, to rebuild your house, now it would be more expensive in Seattle. I would venture to guess that the cost of construction to rebuild your house would be somewhere around $125 a foot in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So you can see that you've got a lot of land value in that property, okay?
Yeah,
absolutely. And that is not a good market to be in.
Frankly, the market is appreciating 1% per month.
That's insane. That's not sustainable.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I'm calculating now one of my Memphis properties.
So you've got properties in Memphis, Indianapolis. I think you have Atlanta too,
62,
right?
$62 a square foot. Oh my God,
isn't that incredible? Yeah. That's a Memphis property, you know, like you said, right?
Yeah, Memphis property. And again, it's the replacement property. The replacement cost of materials is pretty static. It's the labor that really, I think, drives a lot of that fluctuation as
okay,
well.
Okay, so you've got the Seattle property at $300 a square foot. You've got the Memphis property at $62 per square foot. If that Memphis property burnt down today, it would probably cost you $75 or $80 per square foot to rebuild it, okay? If the Seattle property burnt down, it costs you $125 to rebuild it, but you'd have, or, you know, somewhere in that ballpark, but you'd have an expensive lot. And folks, this philosophy makes sense. Invest in these boring linear markets that you don't hear about on the news. You know, all the markets at jasonhartman.com/properties, and you're just much less volatility, much better cash flow, and you can diversify geographically, be in several markets. So Elizabeth, I think you and Neil are making a good decision selling your house. I hope it doesn't double in value after you sell it. Otherwise, you're going to think, no, that wasn't so good. But
well, you know, honestly, we could look at the price of my Amazon stock after I sold it, which is now, I think, almost $1,000 a share. So, you know,
used to work at Amazon, by the way. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I worked there for 4 years and I worked there relatively early in the company's history. And I worked there for 4 years.
What was your position at Amazon, by the way?
So I was a senior manager for product and program management. So I worked in two different groups. And so I had a team of, gosh, I don't know, like 20-ish people. My first position, I was in the ordering flow. I managed all of the programs. So basically, the whole of the Amazon e-commerce engine sat on the work that my team did for everything. And the second position I had was in a product line. And it was a fascinating role that I learned a lot. But it's the role today, I think, would be equivalent of a director at most companies.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. So just wanted to kind of, I mean, your background's in tech and software and project management. And, you know, you had a big team at T-Mobile that you managed. What, a couple hundred people or something?
Yeah. Yeah. About 200 people. And, you know, it was funny because I think the stress was the same. There were very different types of stresses. You know, the products were really exciting at Amazon. I really enjoyed that time.
Good stuff. Well, hey, Elizabeth, we've got to wrap it up, but thank you for joining us today. And the Women Investing Network podcast is out there, so you can find it on iTunes or any podcast platform. Just newly launched. Please go listen, rate, review, subscribe to that show, and of course to this show as well. And we will talk to you on the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.